This podcast is brought to you by Place Pros, commercial and investment real estate, and NicoTour.boutique, your one-stop shop for everything cool.
Barry Walton, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here. This is awesome.
It's so cool to have you here. I feel like we're in the same pool of things outside of this podcast.
Yeah.
You are a documentarian. You've won an Emmy, and you brought it here today.
I did. I brought some toys to look at, or a toy.
We would like to see that golden goddess.
I brought
right
it.
Now.
We're going right to it
because it's sitting in front of me. We all want to hold it.
Let's do this.
And I want Jesse to feel too. how heavy it is.
Wait. This is the golden box. Now I think I ripped out the bottom of this golden box. It used to all be mounted in here, but this is the golden box that came in.
Oh.
And this is the Emmy. I know that's.
Can we hold it?
Yeah, please. No, take it. Take a look at it.
This is her. Okay. It's the 2013 Michigan Emmy Awards for Sports One-Time Special. Tell us, how did you acquire her?
So I was working with the Detroit Pistons at the time, and I was creating a series that would play on Fox, and we created a series on Kyle Singler and Kevin Love. Kevin Love played with LeBron James, won a championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Okay.
Kyle went on to play with Kevin Durant, in OKC, and they almost met back up in the NBA Finals. But Kevin and Kyle had a high school rivalry
for
3 years in Oregon,
uh-huh.
North and South. And it went on it was just an epic battle. And so I had access to Kyle. And kind of we created this series and we played it on Fox and it obviously was successful and then
it was
about the rivalry between Kevin and Kyle and the ongoing battle for basketball and sports fans kind of ate it up and,
cool
and Kyle played for Duke and he had won under Coach K had won an NCAA championship so he was just an interesting guy and then we kind of unfolded, you know, stories about him and his coach, and it was just a fun piece. It was just a one-off, yeah, one-time sports
that,
piece.
That sounds like a good story to
Well, here's where, follow. Well, what I was saying when I said he played for with Kevin Durant was if they had gone back into the finals and it had been Kyle didn't get as much playing time as Kevin Love. Kevin Love is a well-known commodity in the NBA.
Okay.
Kyle was kind of like a sixth man or seventh man. So unfortunately, it wouldn't have been a matchup. But I called his parents when they were going. And I said, because I maintained a relationship with them because we went out and met him. And I said, listen, if Kyle wins, I want to get back in touch with him. I mean, if he gets in the finals against Kevin. But he never did, unfortunately. That would have been the series. That would have been the payoff.
Totally.
Right? Yeah, because like. From high school, can you imagine from all those years in high school to having an NBA kind of rematch?
Were you able to get like archival photos and stuff?
Yeah, no, we had all the high school footage, and that's kind of my, I've got this. That's my thing with I've got this weird. I don't completely understand my love for documentary film, but I've got this weird fact. I just recently watched this series called America in Color on Paramount. And it's all this old early 1900s footage that they recolored.
Oh, my gosh.
Have
I think
you seen
I've
this?
Seen like a ad for that. It's really impressive.
Yeah,
You're
it's
like,
really good.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a documentary about it?
Yeah, so they it's American history on Paramount. And it's really just a well-told piece. But I could sit and watch old archive footage. I got this weird quirk.
Yeah.
I do not know what it is.
No, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's like a little peek into history.
Yeah.
But you've produced seven and or directed.
Yeah.
Produced/directed.
Yeah.
The first one I watched was Artemis.
Mm.
And I got really curious because I'm around producers a lot, but not directors so much. I want to know what the fine line is, because during the movie you said that or in one of your interviews that you had like a crew out there. I was under the impression you were the one that was asking the questions to the folks that you met along the way. Who was your crew and how did that work?
Yeah, I had this two awesome youngsters that came out of Full Sail, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Props to that place. Which
yeah,
turns
I
out
wanted
a lot
to
of
go there, but I don't know. I don't know if I ever applied or I didn't make it. I don't know.
I I still would like to go there. I mean, totally. I've wanted to go back and get a master's, you know, but Tanner Roberts and Parker Davidson, two youngsters.
Okay.
Tanner, I love these guys, and they stayed up all night on the shore. I had access to the Apollo Viewing Center.
Okay, so you were the only one by the rocket.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and a friend of mine, Tim Honeycutt, who's an engineer, an operations engineer in NASA, had helped me gain that access.
Okay.
And so I had access there, and then Tanner and Parker came to the first launch, and that's where we got a lot of those. And those guys are so talented.
The OTFs, yeah.
And what you're saying, I think, is a little bit like the you mentioned fine line, like who gets all the credit, and how does that how, is that what you
yeah,
were thinking?
Yeah, well, I mean, not so much credit, but like, what does a director do that a producer doesn't? I think they're more of like the executive producer in the background. Like they're the ones being like, you go out there and get those interviews and you go and do that time lapse. You have amazing time lapses on that documentary.
Those, yeah, some of those were mine. It's a good question. I think the layers, I think the roles become more defined with the budget.
Yeah.
With a budget, with our budget, it was it was basically like
it was a three-man band.
Yeah, it was exactly.
Did you edit it?
I did. I edited the piece, and for me, it was. I have a passion for space, and I want to connect more to that industry. And I just saw, what better way than just to take advantage of an opportunity and go out and make something, tell a story.
How did you get that opportunity? How did you connect with NASA?
Well, this really started when I started, okay, so in full disclosure, I moved here 3 years ago, 2020.
Right.
And getting settled, obviously everyone around here loves the launches, and I'm one of those people. So I started going to all the launches, and what I love, along with archive footage, is I love quirky subcultures. And when I would go to these launches, and I mean not have access, but just go to the lagoon, to the beachside, you'd see all these guys on their ham radios and just picking up the signals. And just hanging out to see the launch in this this super subculture.
Yeah.
And then I was down there, and I found it fascinating. This one guy was an ex-NASA engineer. He had bought and built a, like, missile-esque guidance system with a camera on it, mind you.
Oh, my gosh.
Not a missile. Okay. Laser-guided camera. And he would pull it up to the seat. SpaceX kicked him off the base because he had captured when that one launch blew up?
What, like
there's if you go on
ago?
Yeah, if you go on, I think his page is
that happened when we were little.
No, it's been like a decade, yeah.
Oh, okay, never mind.
But maybe not that long. But anyways, I don't know all the details, but I know that he captured it. They didn't want him to release it. He did anyways, and they stopped giving him access.
Oh my God.
So he was stuck shooting shoreside. But he jumped, and he had this little, like, camper, not even like a half camper. Like, you remember being John Malkovich?
Yeah, I saw it once.
And there's, like, floor 13 and a half, and you go inside, and it's, like, half. Anyways, there's a scene that you kind of, like, squeeze into, like, a really small space.
Yeah.
That was his area. Like, I had to crawl into this cubbyhole, and he had all these monitors capturing the launch, and it was just amazing. So I'm kind of deep diving here, but
I like it.
When I was there and I kind of saw this subculture, I was like, this is an untold story.
Yeah. Yeah, why the secrecy? I mean, I'm always poking at that.
You mean, what do you mean
with
secrecy?
NASA? Like, why would they not want that footage to be released? It's just what it is. It happened. It's documented, you know? Like,
I think.
Why?
I think it's controlling your image at that level.
Yeah.
I think it was more SpaceX. And I think they just wanted to control their image.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And they don't want third party, especially they don't want to give, like, if I'm going to let you in this close to the launch, you need to abide by our interests.
Yeah, you're right.
You know?
You're right.
And that's what I think. I mean, I'm down with conspiracy theories.
I love conspiracy theories.
I'd love to deep dive into that. I got buddies always sending me stuff and, about did we make it to the moon
did
or didn't we?
It to the
you know,
moon.
I was just recently at Lockheed Martin and listening to them for an event and listening to them talk about, you know, going back to the moon and all this stuff. And sometimes I'm like, and on the same day that I was going, a friend of mine showed me this snapshot of like a phone from the 1960s and a phone from today. And he's like, went to the moon, 1960s phone.
Yep.
Still can't go to the moon.
Still can't. They
iPhone.
They lost the telomeres, whatever those are, is what, yeah, my deep dive into that. And it's
telomeres,
like,
what's that?
I don't fucking know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. But that's what I've read. And there's so many like NASA engineers here and they're getting old. And I'm thinking to myself, like, somebody needs to get in their face before they get dementia and nobody knows anything, you know, like, what? I don't know.
It's funny. Like, I love conspiracy. Only because, like, in an effort to, like, not be completely defranchised by this crazy world we live in. You can't say anything nowadays.
I know.
You know, so, like, even, who am I? I'm nobody. But even I, like, even I censor a little bit of my speech, which is,
sure,
which is stupid at some level, but I guess it's just the age we live in. But, like, I'm torn because I watch, if you watch In the Shadow of the Moon, mm-hmm. they interview the astronauts,
right.
And those guys are so authentic in their love
are
and
passion.
I mean, you listen. You should watch In the Shadow of the Moon. Great documentary.
Okay, I'll do that.
And those guys are so in and so passionate about their experience that I watch that and I have a hard time going, it's not real.
Okay, to be fair, I've only watched clips of their interviews where they look really uncomfortable answering questions in front of the press. So, yeah, I haven't seen
those. Got it. You should watch. I mean, so if you watch that and then you measure it up against kind of what, and like yesterday, a friend of mine just sent me a whole thing on the breakdown and the lines and you know, Stanley Kubrick
shadows.
And,
yeah,
and how they shot
stuff.
It. And I'm like, I mean, I work in this industry. You work in this industry.
Yeah. Also, like the camera. I've gone far enough to be like, where's the camera? If they're both, we see both of them, like who.
And
operating.
They broadcast it live?
Yeah. And
from
like,
the moon?
So the camera was supposedly on one of the legs of the lander.
Yeah.
But also like, what?
I think for me, here's the thing, is this could be easily debunked because we have powerful enough telescopes to just look at the moon mm-hmm. and probably see the flag still there. Right? Am
Do
I
we?
Right or wrong? I don't know. Do we?
We should.
This is so much speculation.
I know.
But I feel like it could be easily debunked. Do you know, so this is where
that's
I'm torn.
Because
this is, so holding both, so I like to look at things objectively and not state an opinion, but have the viewer like ask themselves. And so what I say is like looking at the shadow of the moon, listening to the astronauts, their enthusiasm, their authenticity, and going, I'm conflicted. Those guys seem really legit. Some of them seem like they have strong ethics and seem like really good people.
Yeah.
It'd be, how have they held up this narrative for so long? And then turn that off and watch kind of the critical analysis of the moon footage, and you kind of go, that seems legit. Did they do it? Did they do it and then just refilm it? I mean, what? I don't have that answer, but it does seem like if NASA wanted, they could easily debunk it.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about going back, and apparently NASA has said that section where we landed is now historic. They've protected it as like an area you're not supposed to. Is this true?
How?
This could be false. This could be completely.
I mean, I don't know.
Disclaimer.
Who's going up there and putting the rope around?
Yeah, disclaimer. This could be completely false, but somebody.
The truth must be somewhere in between, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Ask yourself. I'm saying to the viewer, ask yourself.
Ask the questions. I just have like a mountain of questions.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this or that. I just want to understand it better.
Right.
Because
that's what we do. That's what we do, right?
Yeah, We investigate.
Yeah. I think curiosity is healthy. You know?
Yeah.
A certain amount of curiosity, you know, naivete and curiosity. Like, not cynical curiosity. I don't want to be a cynic. I want to just.
And I know that I know nothing,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, like, I just want to ask questions and get an answer that kind of makes more sense.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. So that's, That's my thought on the on
Artemis.
The,
all right,
Artemis.
But
we went a long ways off of off of a space
launch. You said so you got here in 2020.
Yeah, I did.
Where were you before that?
Detroit. Yeah.
Okay.
I've moved a lot in my life.
So, but 2020 was pandemic, and you made a documentary called Empty America, which I saw as well. Very well done.
Thank you.
Tell me, how did you film that? Were you really going to all these places? So it was your footage. This was a one-man band?
Well, I got to stop breathing. It's not so close. I breathe in the mic here. Excuse me, audience. I'm trying to be a professional podcaster here.
We're not professionals.
No, exactly. That's what I like about where do I start with this? Locked in February. You know, February came. Mm-hmm. Strange time for everyone. I was living in Michigan. I was already struggling with the cold.
Yeah.
You know, I lived in California. I lived in warm weather for basically almost 18 years.
Yeah.
Moved back to Michigan. I'd been there for like 7 years, and me and my wife's from Italy, struggling with the cold. So locked in the house February, March, shut down, and just like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So here's the true story is, like, I said to my wife, I just had this vision. So I used to do Jeep commercials and work for Jeep, do Chrysler. We used to go out to Moab, to Utah, to the desert.
I always wondered where they filmed this.
Yeah, we used to do these things in Moab and Utah. And so I knew Utah well because I'd been out there like six times in the last like 2 or 3 years. And I said, this is so weird. Let's just get away from people. Let's just go out to the desert. Like, everyone's worried about contact. Like, how about if we just get away from people, but we get some space? Mind you, no better time to take a vacation. Only from the perspective is I could barter at the hotels.
With what?
Because there's nobody there. I'd be like, I'm a veteran. They'd be like, it's 120 for the night. I'm like, I'm a veteran. Can you give me a discount? Could we get? I'd literally barter. The hotels would let me barter. That's never so before funny. In history. I would get $120 hotels down to like $80 everywhere I went.
Nice.
Because they were empty.
Yeah, nobody wanted to go anywhere. Completely
empty. We would be the only people. Yeah, it was kind of eerie. I question if I was being irresponsible.
Well, yeah, everybody, you know. Yeah, there was this like blogger mom who got canceled because she decided to go on a journey much like yours. And it's like, I don't know. It was so confusing back then.
Well, I wasn't really sharing what we were doing at the time. And I brought the cameras along as a caveat. I mean, I have them.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm gonna
documentarian.
Yeah, I'm gonna take beauty
footage.
Well,
that's what I thought. It was so brilliant of you to take the cameras out. I know you got the.
Believe it or not, I almost didn't. I know.
Well, that kind of reminds me of the one I saw where you were on the boat. Remind me what it, reaching
the
reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, because I've faced that too, like the struggle of pulling the camera out.
Yeah.
It's there, you know? I don't know what there is.
That's an interesting topic because, you know, just kind of shifting from one to the other and shifting gears, like, man, that I think that is the difference in kind of making it and not making it in this industry sometimes.
Yes.
I had the biggest struggle. That film that you mentioned, Reaching Reality. So we go, me and a friend went on a sailing trip for 2 months from San Francisco down to the tip of Mexico. We explored 7 islands, and it was the most miserable first month of my life.
I know. I want to dive more into that actually because I could sense that it was like, and then at one point, you know. Let me see. I wrote down quotes.
This is an honor. I love this. I've never had anyone care about any of my work. You might be the
really?
First person to ever show any interest in anything I've done.
It was really cool because it's like, it's very, I don't know. I think it's what a lot of us want to do, right? But you could see your struggles. There was a line, and I can't find it on my notes because they look like chicken scratch. Oh, here it is. Barry's episodes. Like, it was touched on, and the word explosions was used. And I'm curious, like, what that looked like. Because obviously, you or I are not going to point the camera in our own face when we are raging.
Yeah.
Is that what happened on the boat?
Well, I was 20. I was 31. And probably I'm a creative type and moody, probably. I wouldn't go as far as to say I'm bipolar. I'm clinically bipolar, but I'm moody. I'm emotional. I'm very in that regards.
And I like to say passionate.
It's a good word. And then you take that and you put it on, like, we were on a 23-foot.
No kidding.
Do you know sailboats? Do you know sailboats? Boats very well?
I know.
23 small.
Yeah.
And we're on the Pacific.
And why on earth?
Yeah. Okay.
I know the whole surf culture too, and it's like, oh, we'll do anything to get on a boat. Like, I've been on surf trips, and I don't understand them. It's rough. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. And then at the end of the day, rarely do you get the wave that you're going after. Why the hell did you do this? Yeah. Because you had a cozy little life. You had a girlfriend. You left. Mm-hmm. Did you guys break up?
Well, she broke up with me before I left.
Before you left?
She broke my heart. The one that got away. The one that got away.
Was
no
way, man.
No, no,
because
no.
Later you went to Italy.
No, I've got the. I am married. I am. Wife. Yeah, I'm so lucky right now. I don't want to mislead and create a narrative. But
why leave those little snippets out of the doc? Were you just not thinking that mattered?
Well, I think it does have to do something with maturity and growth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As you grow in your storytelling. Even now I'm working on a documentary where the storytelling is so hard. And, you know, when you're starting out, you don't have the funding to hire people. Finally, I've gotten the funding to hire a writer. And all of a sudden, I have perspective I never would have had. Right. And in that one, that was all funded and done by me. I did the editing. I did everything from A to Z. So sometimes it's hard to see those things.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to tell that. And it also felt like I was taking the viewer on a journey of the trip on the boat primarily. Yeah. And then if I started talking about this relationship, did I show them the relationship? I guess I was in conflict with that. And I didn't know how to delve into, and it was hard to measure, like, is this boring or is this interesting? So, you know, that's the hardest thing is like.
Well, you got to see the girlfriend a little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, she did not like the idea.
No, not at all.
But then, it was like, I think that my main question is, I know guys do this too, and girls do this too, like Eat, Pray, Love. Like, sometimes you just have to get up.
I love that book.
In your situation and leave and find yourself.
Yeah.
Even if it's like you're masking this with finding the wave or even making the dock.
Well, you know, I had set in my mind that if this trip, it was a 2-month trip, if this was the difference between us making it and not making it, then
true.
I'm not giving up the trip. Like, you know, like there was a conflict. She didn't want me to go on the trip. And I was like, If,
why not though?
Yeah,
did she have a reason?
I don't think it was ever gonna work.
Yeah, see, there
just,
you go.
It just wasn't gonna
there
work.
There you go. You like ripped out the Band-Aid before.
Yeah.
And, you know, like
she saved me the trouble.
Exactly.
It was. I don't know how much I want to share with everyone, but it was not. She was. That was just not the best relationship I'd had in my life. It wasn't a good. You know, like that time in my life, I was very alone. It's funny because like. You know, you'd have to follow the cycle. And I mentioned that I'm writing a book and I'm kind of telling the story,
yeah.
Which is a search for self, God, love, you know, the known and the unknown, which is a yin and the yang and in kind of like, anyways, there's a lot to that. But at that time in my life, I had kept kind of pushing into the unknown, right? The unknown is kind of.
It's freaky.
Yeah, it's the adventure. It's like. I'm taking risks. I'm going places I haven't been. And so I kept leaving friends and going to new places. And that trip, and I was also had like a little bit of an addiction to adventure and travel.
Yeah.
And surf can be very addicting.
Yeah.
And I had no balance in that. I had just like gone full into that. Like that dominated my life. I couldn't think of anything but that. So because of that, everything else was lacking and I was very lonely. And when you're very lonely, it's almost like there's a certain amount of desperation and vulnerability.
Lonely even if you were coupled up.
Yeah. Well, I was just, yeah. And so because of that, I clung to someone that.
Oh, yeah.
I was clingy.
Clingy.
You know what I mean?
But then how did you know to rip yourself apart or away? I don't know. There must have been something.
Well, I do think if you, I don't think enough credit is given to people, you know, our awareness of what's right for us and what's wrong for us. You know what I mean? Like, okay. I knew that wasn't a good relationship. You know what I mean? And yeah. So I don't think enough, and I knew it from day one. So for me, I don't think enough credit is given to us on being aware. So I knew that. But I was such a dramatic person. It was like, it was just such a different time in my life. You know what
yeah.
I mean? I was just like so dramatic and just, no, don't leave me. And I was so, gosh, it's so funny. You're kind of bringing up like parts of my life that I've kind of packed away
a
little bit.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to talk about that.
I don't want to think about it. I don't mind.
Well, there's a lot of times when you look back and you kind of cringe at maybe reactions you've had. I know I do that and I beat myself up. But there's certain things and moments that you're just like, I don't want to think about that anymore. Like, you have to give yourself credit for being young and being able to sort of overcome whatever it is that happened there.
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny because when I'm writing this book and retelling, and it's kind of a story of my life, it's so cathartic, and I go through these moments, and it's funny, like, it's like you say, like, I'll have moments when I'm writing that book, even from the trip, where I had these explosions that you were mentioning earlier, and I'll, like, call up Dan, who's one of the characters.
So you guys are still friends.
Oh, yeah.
I was curious about that.
Yeah, very close with Dan, and me talk once a week, and Dennis once a month or so, still very close. Okay. He lives in the Pacific North, Northeast, and Dennis is still in L.A. But I'll call him up and want to apologize. There were times.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like, Dan, I'm sorry that I was such a... Especially when I was editing the documentary, because I would see myself talking, and then I'd be like, I'm sorry I was so upset.
Was
I had
there
upset.
More footage of you that you didn't include?
Oh, my gosh. There's so much. I mean,
recut. Do you still have it?
Well, so I have on Amazon, so there's two places where you can see, like, the longer version. There's a longer version.
I made
a series.
So, yeah, I saw the series. It's like a four-part series on Amazon.
On YouTube, my distributor put on Amazon Prime. I have two on, the four-part series, I said, no one's watching that. Let's just leave the one on. And they took the videos off, but they left the, anyways, whatever.
Wait, I have a question for the young documentarians out there. How the hell do you get your stuff on Amazon? You say you have a distributor.
Well, it's a lot harder than it used to be.
Really?
Amazon has really buckled down post like the age of like conflict of sharing information and getting misinformation and all this stuff. So pre-COVID, my distributor could just I have a distributor in Europe. It's crazy. Footnote, like this stuff has been seen in Russia. He would hit me up and be like, "Hey, I just got an offer for $2,000 to show this in Russia," and I'm like, "Sure, let's do it."
That's so cool.
No, I know it was kind of cool. What would be funny is if I went to Russia someday and they're like,
"Bravo."
I'm like, "Wait, no one knows me in America, but I'm like David Hasselhoff in Germany." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that would be so awesome. It would be my dream. At least somebody like knows me. You know, I don't care if it's the Russians. Okay, so we got a nasty conflict going on. Caution,
yes.
red light. No one knows anymore, right? Okay,
yeah.
I don't want
to. We'll have to come back and do like a full on conspiracy theory breakdown.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That would be.
I've been waiting for the right.
I mean,
person.
if I'm on,
or
like
a table discussion.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I would go into COVID because, again, we were talking about the trip across America.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of that, just to kind of, for the audience that's following along, we opened up the COVID trip and we opened up kind of the sailing trip. So if I were to jump back to that trip.
Yes. So the COVID trip was across America and the audio was just from, like, radio stations.
Yeah.
But the visuals were, like, landscapes and just... stops and stuff.
Let me ask you a question. When you said you were locked in your house, when this all went down, Okay, so none of us have had an experience like this ever.
Ever, yeah.
What was going on with you? Like, what were
I
you
was
doing?
Up in Jersey, so like right next to New York, just on the outskirts, and we locked ourselves for months. Like, to think about it now, to be like, what do you mean you were in your house for months? We were the type of people that would get groceries delivered and fucking scrub them before they ever went in the house. Months of that. And then I remember the first time we went outside. It must have been like late spring, and we were like terrified to have people walking by. And then we went back inside and like hid for another 2 weeks before we're like, maybe we should go out on a car ride. And we went to Hoboken, and there was people just like living their lives. And we're like, what? Like, we were kind of in disbelief because we thought everybody was just staying in their house. Nobody was walking or going to cafes or anything. So that was kind of eye-opening. And then, you know, even my daughter, Quincy, like, the first time a human, like, went near her, she freaked out and, like, came running back. So it was a mind fuck for a while. I think months later, we decided to come down here. We grew up here. And then that was even more like, what in the hell have we been fed? Or we took extra precautions. I thought we were all going to die for a while there. And I didn't want to.
So wait, when you say, what have we been fed? What did you start to, like, did you have a moment where have you come to a resolution on that? And would you handle it differently? And what do you see differently? Any thoughts on that?
No, I feel like it just had to be the way it was, you know, I don't know. There's almost too much to say.
Yeah.
I do remember switching between Fox and CNN, and trying to sort of find some common truth or ground. It was so confusing, but I just remember being terrified for months. And then dealing with like somebody that's she was like 4 or 5 Zoom schooling, like it was ridiculous. Did you have your son then?
How old was he? That was driving me nuts.
Oh my god.
See, it's funny because I think this is a great conversation, because I think what you said about, like, it's almost too much to talk about, and I think there's not a lot of people that will unpack it anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, as a society, we've all said, look, it's kind of like the relationship thing that we just were talking about with me. It was just like, I've kind of put that away.
Yeah, yeah. Like, why even poke at it?
Yeah.
There's truths to both sides, but also, like, I guess, in light of this new COVID variant, I guess maybe I'm hesitating to say anything because I don't want people to die, but are they still dying? And if they are dying, is it because of that, or is it other issues? I don't know.
See, now the humorous side of me wants to say, I don't care if people die. I used to say that. I used to be on the phone. So I was doing a call with some friends in Europe, actually. My friend Lars, he lives in London, and my friend Cody actually is in Australia. So we were on a Zoom call together and during the lockdown. And they were calling me to ask me, like, what are you doing? You're driving around the country.
Yeah. And Australia was super locked down.
Yes, Australia was crazy. Yeah. And I'm like, and they were like, Lars is like, I just don't want to be killing people, Barry, all pompous. And I'm like, I don't really care if people die. But I said that in a sense of like, that was the crux of COVID. It was all of our responsibility not to kill each other, right?
And
that was a hard thing to navigate, because is it really, you know? And everyone would be like, well, we're in a social contract with each other, right? So it's nice, Barry, you can have this experience, but we have a social contract and a social responsibility to each other. And I always was like, well, that's true of everything, you know, but you can always take it to the extremes.
Right.
And like, where does that responsibility begin and end? And so for me, all I care about is, just having the conversation in a sense that, like, I took a much different approach.
Yeah.
I went the other way.
Yeah, you did.
And so for me, I want to talk to someone like you and understand you better. And I would hope that you and people like you would want to understand me better.
I understand both sides. Like, yeah. I understand why you did what you did, and I understand why I did what I did. And I wonder, well, you know, I was saying we were watching the news, the two news outlets, but after a while, I'm like, let's shut this off and never turn it on again.
Yeah.
And that's what we did, you know.
That's amazing. I love it. I was talking to a friend of mine recently. He's 70, and one of my close friends. He was out in California, and he was just recently, we got on the phone, and in the first 2 minutes of the conversation, he started ranting about the Trump indictment. Mm. And he was, like, so worked up and so angry, and I'm like, Pablo, like, what? Dude, like, there's so many other things I'd rather talk about. I haven't talked to you in, like, 4 months.
Especially when people are, like, so aggravated about it. I mean, as a girl who, I won't go into that, but I don't understand sports. I don't like them. And it's because, I think it's because it's the same thing. People get so ragey.
Yeah.
You know, like when my husband's team loses, I mean, he's very, but I could tell it affects him. You know, well, like, and he gets.
And what I was saying in relation to you turning the TV off.
Yeah.
Was I said, wait, where do you get all this stuff from? And he's like, oh, I'm watching. And he's going through the networks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Pablo, I stopped watching news a long time ago.
Yeah.
I think
they showed us the true colors, right?
I mean, it's just, it's rage. It's, they're incentivized by rage. And in fact,
they're entertainment companies.
Right.
It's
no.
not news okay. per se.
Okay. Back to the film part of who we are.
Yeah.
And I think this is valid. And I was having this conversation, and I hope I don't lose the thought because it was just there. But I was talking about this, you know, Jordan Peterson talks about the sacred falling into the profane, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And what that basically means is there are things in life that the human, because we're so simple, and we categorize quickly things as good and bad, and we want to have clear understandings of characters.
Yeah.
I want to know who you are. You know, I listened to you talking with Char Good. She's like, she knows her brand. She's like, I'm good, I'm happy. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
I love her. She, by the way,
yeah,
I love her.
She's great.
So, and that's easy for people to characterize. So when I saw like Wolf Blitzer, mm-hmm. CNN anchor on a movie, for me, that was a definition of the sacred falling into the profane, meaning he went from an outstanding reporter of truth
right.
to a fictional actor in a fictional story.
Right.
And what I knew as a filmmaker is my mind subconsciously. Now, right now I'm thinking, mm-hmm. I'm aware, I'm in this industry, so I know how to critically analyze characters.
Right.
But I'm trying to think from the layman's perspective. Their subconscious mind has suddenly begun to question truth. Why? Because how do I know when he's acting and when he's
versus,
not acting,
yeah.
right? And so I don't ever remember Tom Brokaw being in a film. I don't ever remember, you know, you think of the greatest character anchors in American news. They never crossed that line.
Right.
And then these guys start crossing this line from entertainment for money. And you're like, what's truth? And so for me,
what's truth? Yeah.
So me, truth is in question, and mm-hmm. and I was having this talk with Paul, and I'm like, he's like, how can people support this side or that side? And I'm like, dude, nobody trusts anybody.
Is that, you think that's, I mean, yeah, I guess if you're on the left, you don't trust the right, and then people like, I don't know, me, who are on neither side, I don't trust either of them.
Yeah, I think most people don't. I think the truth of the matter is, if we really knew, the majority of people don't trust anyone, and what the hard part of that
sad.
Is they're left to their own
yeah.
devices to decide.
Right.
So they go, I don't trust anyone, but I'm in this group, this tribe, working class group, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and I can relate with what they believe in, and so I'm going in that direction. and I'm in this corporate group and I'm in this side and I can relate with, because I know corporate culture, and my dad was a working class man in a steel, he worked in a steel foundry his whole life.
Oh, wow.
So I know working class culture, and I did the corporate thing. And then I was like, screw it all. I'm going on my own. But so I sit on both sides and I go, when you have no trust, you just trust your tribe.
Right. And I think maybe that's, that might have been your mentality when you decided to go on the journey. Like, it's not that you really don't care if anybody dies. It's
I was just curious.
You're curious.
Like, what's going on?
Or like, yeah.
I was like, what is going on?
Or also you have to do things for yourself. Like, if what you say is true, that you don't trust, then it's almost like being in an abusive relationship. Like, there has to come a point where you shake yourself and be like, you have to love yourself, you know, before
well,
you
I do,
can...
And that's where I was. I mean, look, I work in marketing. I understand messaging.
Yeah.
I understand. And I work really hard on creating what they call, quote unquote, organic. They don't call it organic anymore. What do they call it? They call it something else. But anyways, you know what I mean by organic. It's authentic.
Yeah. So what are some of your clients? This is through Endless Media. Your marketing. It's a marketing company. But you're telling stories through the marketing.
Well, one of my favorite clients and biggest clients that I've had for 6 years is OpenGov. They're a SaaS company out of San Francisco. And I work to tell stories of government officials. And I've worked with, I've interviewed the mayor of Tampa. I've interviewed the mayor of Savannah. And I've gotten to travel across the country and meet government officials and kind of tell their stories.
What do you find?
Just real people. That's what this next documentary is about. I'm all over the place with stories here, but I'm probably and it's okay. I'm probably leaving people hanging on a couple things, but I think I can answer that in a couple things. What I find is just real people. By and large, government is full of real people that just want to do good for their community.
When do you think it gets to a compromising level? Like, when do they leave these?
I think local governments, by and large, are still very pure in nature.
I could see
that's
that.
Why they don't have any money. I mean, really, like, what we should be fighting for is that federal funding be reversed and the states stop paying so much to the federal government. One thing I'm all about is when I see states taking more power and ownership. And that's a big reason I came down to Florida, of their own money. Because by and large, local government is not corrupt. We still have the small time.
Sure.
Like,
why else did you come to Florida? Did you have friends here?
My wife's Italian. She grew up in Italy. It's warm weather, and she has Italian friends down here.
Really?
Yeah. There's a whole Italian community down here.
Where?
Well, I mean, my wife has a connection, a group of friends of like 10 and 10 friends. And they
are you guys Italian-American club members?
We were, yeah. We've been to a couple.
I've been wanting to go there.
I love.
It's like a lot of fun.
No, it's so good for my wife. Michigan, I don't want to be down on Michigan. I love Michigan. It's where I grew up. Or Detroit, but this is a better scene.
That's
for
when
her.
You went. Okay, can we go back? So you went on this boat. You came back. You met your wife in Costa Rica, but she was Italian.
Yeah.
How long after that documentary did you meet her?
The sailing documentary?
Yeah, the sailing documentary.
The sailing documentary, that was probably 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
So you're still traveling from, were you in Hollywood?
I was doing
ever?
Shows for Nat Geo and Animal Planet.
What show did you do on Animal Planet? I did Too Cute.
Weird, True, and Freaky.
Ooh.
Ever heard of that? Weird, True,
no.
and Freaky?
No. Was it good?
No. it was interesting. They pumped out 2 seasons, and we ended up doing like 54 episodes. And we would go and find like scorpion milkers who would milk scorpions. Venom is some of the most rarest proteins on the planet.
And what do you do with that?
Well, they make medicines out of it and stuff like that.
Wow.
They can bind it. So proteins are like, from what I understand,
yeah,
are like building blocks, like Lego blocks.
Okay.
And oh, I can find this rare Lego block, and that's going to make, you know, my...
All the pieces come
together.
Yeah,
it's going to make all... So,
oh, that's fascinating.
So they, yeah, so they milk... So that was one, and we went and saw these big horned cows in the
were
middle of America.
Were you producing in the field?
Field producing,
so
yeah.
You were, like, right up...
Yeah,
right
I was... I was on a plane, like... I could have... I should have been a pilot. I was traveling so much. I was on a plane, like... 3 or 4 days a week for 6 months straight.
Wow.
It was both the greatest and the most miserable.
Isn't
you know
it like
it
that?
You know,
like
is.
You can't enjoy the moment. And again, another thing from reaching reality, like you're not able to enjoy. You wanted to be a filmmaker and here you are making your film and yeah. You are miserable. I feel like that's what it is when you're working too. Like I love editing. But when I'm sitting at my desk actually doing it, like, it could be really stressful and I can lose sight of it. Unless, like, I'm slapping down some music, it's fun.
Yeah.
But still, you're under pressure. Yeah. If you have, like, a really, like, on-hands producer, you're like, get off my back. Like, yeah. Let me just do this. And you
it's
have good
funny
days and bad
because
days.
The what I struggle with most in our industry is when I get on a set with a youngster who thinks it's about being cool. And it's about like I'm doing, you know, I'm
yeah.
doing and like, dude, all I know is work. Like this, like all I know is like I'm not even anybody in this industry. Like I may have reached a threshold in some area, but no one knows me from Adam. And
yeah.
All I know is work from
yep.
the day I started this till now. And every time I turn around, it's work. And if I can build up enough equity in this industry to have some time off, like I'm just like,
totally.
Oh my gosh. And
it's not as glamorous.
No,
as
it's not.
Anybody thinks it is.
But I couldn't do anything else. And I will have, and I have moments.
Same.
I have moments. They're like literally like that fast of a moment, like a click of a finger. Where I'll be like, I'm doing art and
yeah,
I'm making money doing it.
That's what I'm
it.
Saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah
like
yeah.
When I'm laying down music, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, I'm setting the mood.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
And
then you get a call with a client and they'll destroy everything for you.
Yes. Network notes are so annoying.
Oh, and the client that knows how to do it.
Uh huh.
I know how to edit and I can, and I'm like, oh, got it. You.
Here we go.
Thank you.
That's so funny. What other reality? Have you done any other shows? You haven't done reality.
My favorite show. Yeah. I did for Nat Geo.
Nat Geo, okay.
What on the Defying Niagara, about the guys that go over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
Oh,
yeah,
what?
It was cool. Yeah,
in a barrel?
Cool. You know this. They haven't done it for years. They haven't done it since like 2000.
No, I've never heard of this.
2005
was
the last time.
What do you mean they get in a barrel and they throw themselves off the...
They've stopped doing it for years, but like between like the 70s and 2005, and even before, there's this long history of going over Niagara Falls in a barrel. But there was an era, so we captured, it was so cool. I got a private investigator. We dug up like five of the top daredevils. Steve Trotter, who was a Florida guy, went over twice. Dave Munday, again, who was the legend and gone over twice. And then like Peter, I forget his last name, starts with a B. Anyway, no, it wasn't Peter. It was, I'm forgetting his name. He went over on acid and he came out of the barrel naked. And I got him on the phone. I got him on the phone 10 years later after he'd done it. And now he's a dad with kids.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh God, this guy was so cool. I'm like, dude, you are my hero. He's like, he was so excited to hear from us. He's just one of those dads who did this wild thing and now he's on with life and he wasn't ashamed of it at all. And he was telling, and he dug up all his old archive. I got all his old archive of him actually coming out naked and everything.
I don't understand what a barrel is. I'm picturing like a beer or like a bourbon barrel.
Well, originally they had done something similar.
What is it? It's like a vessel?
But yeah, so now they'll take like, let's say like a huge, farms have milk, huge steel, like a gas station would have a huge milk, maybe like huge gas, like steel thing, barrel.
I don't know.
Like if you imagine, you've seen like LP gas. You've seen LP gas, steel kind
so
of.
So it's just like a big steel barrel.
Big steel kind
and
of
you get
thing.
In there and you just toss yourself.
Well, they put padding in it. I love how...
I feel like I'm watching a cartoon in my head trying to understand.
Okay, this is what you're going to love. This is what you're going to love since you're so kind of like, kind of trying to figure this out. So they take a steel barrel and they do some welding and they seal it, obviously. And then they create some padding on the inside and straps. Strap yourself in because you're going to drop 170, I think, 3 feet over the falls. Yeah, exactly.
This is giving me the Titanic submarine vibe.
This is so cool. I wanted to write a book, especially about this dude that went over without a barrel and survived. But anyways, that's another story.
Gosh.
But and one guy went over with a kayak and died. Jesse, forget his name, and I called his mom. I called his mom.
Wait, I'm sorry. You witnessed this?
No. I was just investigating.
Okay.
I called his mom and got permission to use the footage.
Holy cow!
That was a hard call.
I bet it was.
So I mean, and this is journalism.
I know.
Right. So it was journalism. So I'm like, I got the mom's number. There's two of the toughest calls that I ever did. Was this one and another player, NBA player, who. What's his name? Anyways, I don't want to sidetrack. Let me stay focused on this. Jesse's mom, I called her up, and she, you could just tell, like, she was just broken by this. I mean, it had been, like, 10 years after the fact.
Oh,
and
man.
He went, and he was so sure that of his success, he made dinner plans down the river, and they never found his body.
Ooh.
And so I called her up, and I was like, you know, first I want to just my condolences. And
yeah.
You know, this is probably tough, and I don't mean to bring up that, and this is who I am. I'm working with Nat Geo, and we're telling the story, and we have the footage of your son, and we're probably going to tell the story, but I want to be respectful to you and ask your permission. Can we tell the story? I want to focus on what your son loved, his mm-hmm. passion.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to exploit your son, but your son clearly did this enough that he loved it and was willing to do this. And it was an unfortunate end, but I want to celebrate, like, who he was.
So he had done it successfully before?
No, he never did it successfully. No one's ever done it successfully on a kayak. I don't think anyone will. I wouldn't do it, and I'm not encouraging that on that show. Do not do Niagara Falls on a kayak. Don't. Full disclosure.
Yeah,
to camera. Don't do it. But anyway, so what I was telling you is they build these barrels. They make padding. And I started learning about all these guys and the different ways they did it. And it was funny. I got a hold of this reporter for the Buffalo News, and her name was Ann Neville. And Ann Neville would say, well, Steve Trotter is not an authentic daredevil. Dave Munday, he went over without padding, without oxygen, and just strapped himself into the barrel. And I'm like, it was funny because, you know, in life, you think about, like, sports and how they move closer to authenticity. Oh, that's a really great player, and that guy's not because he doesn't do. I never would have thought in barrel riding over Niagara Falls we would get into authenticity.
Yeah,
right?
It's like who? It's almost like it sounds like who can be stupider?
Like, who can? And Dave Munday was all about the boys. For him, it was a bonding experience.
Okay,
right. Steve was all about the promo, and Steve was the guy who went off of the Golden Gate Bridge on a swing. And halfway through, the rope broke. Him and another girl went, or three people, swung off the Golden Gate, and they didn't plan it right. The rope wasn't strong enough, and it broke, and the girl broke her back.
Ooh.
It was a famous story, and like, anyways, he was crazy. He's a Floridian.
Where does he live now?
I think he's passed. I think he passed away.
Okay.
He was in rough shape when I got a hold of him. And when I got a hold of him, I was worried because he was going, I'm going to go over again. And I think it was because we were talking to him, and
like,
he wanted to use it as a spin. And I'm like,
oh, he wanted more time.
He'd gone over twice. He was like, I'm going to do it again. I'm like,
no.
And when I talked to him and got to know him, I was like, he seemed a little rough. He was like closer to 50, and he lived a hard life. Like, aww. I'm like, not a good idea. Don't do it, Dave. Steve. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't go.
That's funny. Oh, my God. We've talked about so much. I've prepared all these cue cards, but we didn't use them.
That's all right.
I do want to
We did
play.
Have fun, though, didn't we?
Well, I want to play a little game before we go. And also make sure you talk about, like, plug your book a little bit more. I have a game for you. It's called Very Good or Very Bad.
Oh, and you did that. Oh, I remember you doing that with Char.
I haven't brought the paddle out in a bit.
Oh, that's cool.
I here's your paddle.
Oh, I get to hold it.
Yeah,
I get to hold it.
We want to get to know you a little bit more.
This is awesome.
All right, your upbringing in Michigan. You touched on it. Was it very good or was it very bad?
Oh, it was very good. It was very good. I grew up in the country. I was a country boy. And my parents wouldn't, there was no video games or anything. They'd just say, go out and play. And I would just go in the woods. The reason I've done so many adventures and stuff is my mom would literally be like, go out and play. And my dad was a Vietnam vet and he had all this old military clothing. So I'd throw on the old camo and his old boots. And I would just go out in the woods for hours.
And it was one of those, like, don't come back till it's dark.
Don't come back till dinner. That's literally had a dinner. My mom literally had a dinner bell.
I have one. I have like three of them.
It was a big triangle, and we'd be out in the woods, and we'd
hear it. That's so cool.
Yeah. I was a country boy.
Very good. What do you have to say about Hollywood? Hollyweird, Hollywood. Ooh. Very good.
That's tough.
I know.
Tell
us a very bad and tell us a very good about Hollywood.
Well, maybe I'll start with the bad and then end with the good. But the bad side of Hollywood was what? I don't know if I want to talk about that story on. It's in my book, and it's such an intense story. But I worked on. I got my start. I was really lucky. I got my start working on films with Brooke Shields, Jennifer Lopez, Will Smith, and I did all these things. I have this great story about Jennifer Lopez. Literally, we were doing a L'Oreal commercial, and I was a PA. I was a favorite PA on set, and she came out. Well, they said, Barry, we want you to hold this heater. I had this big heater for her, and she was literally going to get in the water naked. With just the bottoms, no top.
Yeah.
And they had built this huge pool, infinity pool. She was going to kind of push up into the camera.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those commercials. And there were limited crew, just the DP and the director. And I don't know why they picked me, this young PA at 25, to hold this heater.
Wow.
But, dude, when she came out, she came out in a robe, and it was just us. And my eyes must have been like this big.
Yeah.
And she looked over, and she's like, him? Out. Literally, I got kicked out. So maybe that's the best Barry bad story that I should tell. It gets darker.
Kind of a good story.
It gets darker. There's a dark side of Hollywood that I experienced. Yeah. Really dark.
Did you see the darkness?
I mean, I was on an all gay crew, and I was the hot chick in a law firm, basically.
Yeah.
And look, this isn't me making a statement, but I'm not gay.
Yeah.
And I was just there to work, and the sexual harassment that I experienced was beyond inappropriate. And it ultimately ended in me leaving Hollywood for a while because I had I was in Tennessee.
Wow.
I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and I had a producer. But, you know, I've never exposed his name or anything, but I had a producer kind of, you know, put me in a compromising situation. He invited me to go to a party. The director's going to be here. The night before, I had gone out with Winona Judd. And you know the Judd sisters?
Mm-hmm.
Winona, Naomi. And we were hanging out. I got this great photo. We were hanging out in a bar, and they had us up there. And I remember I sat next to Winona. They moved the manager, and they put me right next to her. And Winona goes, I didn't know you were going to be here, honey. And this is another one of my favorite stories. She goes, if I were only 23 again. And I said, why you got to be 23? And she goes, well, I did just get divorced, and I am feeling a little loosey-goosey.
Oh my God.
At the same time, she reached over and touched me on the knee. And I was, I want to say this appropriately, but maybe she wasn't the most attractive woman for me.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
Let's just say that. And I kind of froze up. And I loved her as a person, but like I wasn't really into that situation. And she was so cool. She leaned into me and she goes, don't worry, honey. Mama would kill me in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, I love her. I love her.
Southern Belle.
Anyways, but then the night before, the night after, I got invited to a party and just it wasn't a party.
Oh,
I was in a hotel room with someone I didn't want to be in a hotel room with. And it
these
just,
are like so many stories you hear that like women tell.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the thing. And that's why it's in my book, because like what's the Me Too movement?
Yeah, the Me Too.
The Me Too movement isn't only one-sided, you know, because like I literally, you know, he served me a drink. I just remember like falling asleep, not being able to stay awake. I remember him leaving the room and coming back and trying to give me a back rub. And I'm a big man.
Oh, my God.
And I'm a very big man, and I wasn't completely asleep. But I remember just trying to push him away.
Yeah.
But I, to this day, I don't know why I couldn't come out of it. And then I woke up. I was fully clothed on the side of my bed, on the side of the bed the next morning. But I just remember falling asleep and never. And I just like,
oh
it was
my
just
God, that's
such
so
a horrible.
Freaky.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying anything happened, but it was a really odd, weird night and that I never wanted to experience again.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was a PA. I was vulnerable. And I was just like, this isn't. And so for a while, I left the industry altogether. I got out and I went into education and left the industry.
Oh,
and
my
then,
gosh.
And then I came back.
Like
but
PTSD.
Oh, no. That was completely demoralizing. I was like on this trajectory. You know, I was meeting Jennifer Love Hewitt. You remember Love Hewitt? You know, I had all, I was on this trajectory and I was just like growing in the industry and I had this experience and I'm like, this is too dark.
Wow.
Like,
have you seen The
dark.
Morning Show? I think it's on.
Yes, I have with Jen, Jen Aniston.
There's so much to that.
Yeah. No, there's the dark side. Like when people, all these conspiracies about the industry, dude, I just had a buddy call me last night. He was living out there. There is a dark side of the industry that cannot be denied.
Yeah. Yeah. In any industry, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Speaking Italian.
Yeah,
you're
parli
very,
bene.
You're very good.
Parli bene italiano. I would say I'm conversational. Yeah.
Good. What about Spanish?
Habla espanole. That's probably about
un poquito.
It. I can have a conversation in Italian. Like I can... We could open
that's
up.
That's good.
But I can't, but I can order food in Spanish.
Good. Okay, yeah. Got it. What about Melbourne, Florida? Is it very good or very
good? Very
good.
I love very it good. Here. I love
what
it.
What about its like laid-back lifestyle?
Can
like
I
we're
just
yeah, go
plug
ahead.
O'Galley, which I love.
Yeah,
even
EGAD?
More than Melbourne, I love O'Galley. Yeah, EGAD. That's where my office is. I
really?
Just want to prop those
where
guys.
Are you at?
I am on
Highland?
Yeah, I'm on Highland, yeah.
Cool.
I'm just in the Ginter building.
Ginter
the
building.
Old building that has the back half cut off because the old train tracks used to run there.
Get out of town.
Yeah. And there's a hole in the ground that the guy who owns it now is filling in, but that's the last of the trench where the train tracks used to run.
Cool. I don't think I've ever... Do you have a sign up?
I do.
Or
it's a little... It's on
a little one? I'm always at Derek Gore's gallery.
Oh, yeah. I know Gore.
How far is that?
Walk. He's just on a little bit further down the street, on away from the center of town,
it's
north.
Above, okay.
Yeah, Grumpy's, yeah. Grumpy's Biscuits. Give those guys a prop. Yeah. Well, listen, if you're listening in the local area, give a prop to Grumpy's. And then also they have Cuban barbecue back there.
Really?
So Frank is the owner of the building and Real Estate Direct. And so he's bringing in and trying to create a little food court over there. So come get some food and say hi.
I like that.
Should I say hi? I don't know. I could have like random people. Like, it's like I just have a small office with a desk. That's it, folks. It's not that exciting.
I'll come say hi. I want to see it.
You can.
Okay.
You can. Anyone else, it's by appointment only.
By appointment only people. Michael Moore.
Very good.
Very good.
Yeah. It's funny you mention him.
I worked on two of his films.
Oh, which ones?
Sicko and Capitalism.
Okay, so here's my thing with Michael Moore. I have a little bone to pick. Can I pick it?
Yeah, pick it.
I was a huge fan of Michael Moore. Fahrenheit 9/11,
yep.
Roger and Me.
Yeah.
And I watch his story and how he made it in the industry, and I've learned a lot of tips from him. My only thing with Michael Moore as I've gotten older and more aware is he was a bit of a propagandist. And so, and that's...
But in a, I don't know, I liked it.
Yeah, entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining, exactly.
But for the uneducated audience, like, I look at it like I had some naivete. So I'm like, oh, that's all true.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And for the, my criticism is that, like, is probably more that the audience should be aware of that.
That it's one-sided.
Yeah, the audience, but audiences aren't. It's hard.
I guess you're right. They should be more aware, though.
I mean, Roger, I like to kind of, you know, rip on the man, but And so Roger and Me, I was all about that. Fahrenheit 9/11 made sense because I saw that whole, the Bush era, that was just such a crock. But
yeah,
I look back on that and I go, well, there were two sides of the story and probably I didn't really fully understand
yeah,
the whole picture.
There's always two sides.
Yeah,
but I do like the way he tells his stories. They're fun.
I'm with you. I wish I wish I could do more, a little bit better like that.
I know, right?
Yeah.
He makes it, I don't know, something to aspire to.
He was killing it for a while there. And he started as a journalist in San Francisco. He's got an interesting story. I met one of his producers who lives in Rochester, Michigan, actually, where I was living before.
Yeah.
And got to chat with him a little bit about Michael. He's just an interesting dude.
He really is.
Yeah.
I'll do one more. Barry Manilow.
Oh, Barry Manilow.
Since you share
good.
A name.
I've done all
Barry
good.
Yeah. Good for
Barry,
you.
Doesn't he do, let's do a Manilow song. What's a song? Blue Jean?
What's
Blue
that
Jean?
One about his dog?
I don't know the one about his dog. I like this. Yeah, this is like a tough challenge.
I'm
drawing a blank, but it's like, what's his diamond? What's that?
It's Neil Diamond.
Oh, that's Neil Diamond.
We're
Barry
mixing.
Manilow.
I don't know.
Oh, we
I
are.
Thought maybe you should, you because people have the same name. You either hate him and you hate when people bring up Barry Manilow.
Oh, I love it when people bring up. You know what I love even more is when, and I want to say this appropriately, but African American or black culture calls me Barry White.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. And then we have something in common.
Voice.
Yeah. I'm Hello. Like, yeah, baby.
All That's right. What I, well, Barry, thank you for playing.
Yeah.
I'm going to gift you. We got new t-shirts
Wait
in.
Wait a minute.
Only local celebrities that come on our show get
oh
the
my
pleasure.
Gosh. This is cool. You know, I love your show.
Oh, thank you so much.
By the way, this place, I think you guys are onto something. This place is full of, like, hidden gems.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
If we could all.
This place is full of hidden gems. You guys need, if you hidden gems out there, hit these guys up.
I'm glad you hit us up because.
Yeah. I'll have to send you some of those names that I mentioned.
Yeah. Can you mention them on.
Yeah. So the hidden gems that I personally love.
Yeah, please nominate some.
Okay. Well, I would start at. I should have written them down. I have them on my phone. But I would start with. Did you write them down?
I did. Julia Pizik.
Okay, Julia is I connected with her. She's a fascinating person, new to the area, and she worked on the Barat series and did in particular work directly with the Rudy G. Remember the whole
Rudy Giuliani
scene where he's dripping like his hair dye or whatever. And she was fascinating. She worked on that, and she's kind of an interesting cat. And I even asked her. I said, "Hey, do you mind if I tell these guys about you? I'll give her your email."
Yeah, yeah, tell her.
So she's cool. Who was the young girl that I wrote down?
Ella Grace Helton. She acted with Adam Sandler.
And I even saw her last week.
She lives here?
She lives here, and she's
See?
She's a satellite talent. We live in this age where you don't have to live in the major. If you build the network.
Especially after the pandemic.
Yeah, you have to go there and build the network, and you have to show up.
Yeah,
and then you can. That can be hard, but you can live anywhere. And so she lives here, and her mom lives here. Her mom's super cool.
Does she do any local theater, or is she just doing big things?
She did. She was in the Melbourne Film Festival.
Yeah, I wanted to
She
talk
had a
about
little
that.
Film, a student film or something.
I saw you were there, too. Did you do something for that?
The Artemis piece.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was there, too. Like,
they
we
just
must
did
have
their first
crossed paths
yeah,
that
I,
night.
They just started doing documentaries and...
I love that.
And they so we I was in the documentary block, which is cool.
Yeah,
it was fun, yeah.
Really cool.
But she was with Adam Sandler, and she's such a cute, awesome little girl. You got to get her and her mom in here.
I want a kid to come in here or have like a kid's take. I mean,
she's
kids say
she
the
presents
things, right?
She presents herself so well. She's so cool. You
an
gotta
eloquent
get her.
Kid.
Yeah, she's cool.
Good. What about Jamie Engle? He's a writer
she,
for film.
She.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Jamie.
Oh, my, misgendered.
Oh. Cancel me.
I gotten to know her. She's with Brevard Film and Talent. So
okay.
I think they changed their name because Brevard, the acronym for Brevard Film and Talent is BFAT. And everyone's like, why don't we not call ourselves BFAT anymore? So they changed it. But they comboed up with, I think it's Women in Film and something. WIFT.
It's a club here?
Women of Film and Talent or something like
Ooh.
That. Well, that club is a state. BFAT is a local club. Women in Film, and I'm getting the acronym wrong. Anyone hit them up on the chat and correct me. They're comboed up, and they have a group here. So if you want to get involved locally, you hit up BFAT and hit up the women. And I'm totally screwing this up. I should look it up.
Okay.
Let me look this up so we don't screw this up, because I want to give these guys props. It's
I had no idea there was a community here. I mean, I guess we're all just well hidden.
Yeah, no, and that's why I'm saying I think you guys are onto something, and it should be. It's called Women in Film and Television.
Okay.
And they're a great network. They're with Film Florida, and they're all over. But they have a Melbourne group that's connected with BFAT, which they're going to kill me for calling it that. But I think it's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny.
It's kind of funny, but it fits.
Brevard. It's unforgettable, right?
Yeah, they should. Yeah.
And then last but not least, Jim Lewis and Bill Williams, you mentioned. Yeah.
So these guys are respectfully quirky old dudes.
I love quirky old dudes.
That are old classic E&G kind of shooters in the industry. And they've been working with NASA since the shuttle era. And they've been here for a long time. Bill has a studio up in Cape Canaveral, CCI.
Yeah.
And Jim has a studio in Cape Canaveral called CCI, and Bill Williams has a cut above.
Oh.
But I think those guys would be fun to just get on as a pair.
Yeah.
And get them jamming, and because they get along, but they're competitors. But they're the good 80s style competitors. Like,
yeah,
they're not
where
like,
you could still be chummy.
Yeah, they're like, it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good.
You know, I don't know.
Healthy competition.
Healthy competition. Yes. We don't have to go deep on every topic.
I was thinking about
my brand. I'm like, my brand is deep. I was like, Chargood's brand is all good and up and upbeat. And I was like, mine's kind of deep.
Well, I mean, I know we've run out of time, but I'd love to have you back on.
Never enough time.
Never enough time. I got to map out like 2 hours for you.
Oh, my gosh.
Come back and tell us about your current doc that you're working on and when your book comes out.
Well, that's good because we can hold up for all that, because that's coming out next year, really.
What time do you, what
well, the doc we're still a work in progress, but I have a writer working on the final. He had to do a little bit of rewriting, graphics guy, and we're getting into festivals next year.
Cool.
And then I just jumped on with a publisher, and we're starting to work on getting an editor on my book and getting that out either by the end of 2024 or early 2025.
Fun. Well, we'll have to have you on before then.
Yeah,
so,
I'll hit you up.
Hit me up next year. It was such a pleasure meeting you.
Yeah,
I wish
we
had more time.
This was awesome. You guys are awesome.
Woohoo. Thank you.
To be a sponsor or nominated guest, hit us up on the socials. Until next time, bye.